This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Julia Jacobs with Lim Soo Ann and Dashran Johan. So earlier in our first segment, we were talking about the book kiosks that were installed by KL City Hall, which sadly have been vandalized. And we were kind of discussing whether we are a reading society here in Malaysia. But now moving on to our second story, you know, over the past decade or so, especially in recent years, there's been no shortage of protests and gatherings across the globe. So these protests cover a host of issues, from attacks on democracy, human rights issues, climate change, police brutality, and so much more. And one of the recent protests was the one happening in Belarus, where tens of thousands of people have been marching in various cities across the country against the country's president, Alexander Lukashenko. So these protests have been happening for weeks after claims of ballot rigging during elections a month ago and a subsequent brutal police crackdown.
And one of the most striking things about these pro-democracy protests that has been happening in Belarus, for example, has been the enormous role of women in it. So over in that country, you know, three women have been leading the mass opposition movement, and one of them, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, has had even contested in the presidential election in place of her husband after he had been arrested. Mm-hmm. So as for the other two women who are Maria Koleniskova, she ripped up her passport at the border to resist being forcefully deported, although she has now been charged with incitement to undermine national security. And the third woman, Veronika Sepkalo, along with Tikhanovskaya, the presidential candidate, they've now been forced to flee the country. However, the trio have become sort of a symbol of the current opposition movement and even likened to a female rock band. And after the elections, you know, various other women added their forces to those of men who were protesting on the streets. And, you know, various articles, including one on The Atlantic, have highlighted how women are at the heart of the protests in Belarus. And among the hundreds of thousands of demonstrators peacefully protesting in the country, many of them are young women, and they are really just intent to prove President Lukashenko wrong, because he has repeatedly declared that his country was unprepared for female leadership.
But if the intent behind silencing the three women was to suppress unrest in the country, it hasn't worked. And that's because the Belarusian protests have been largely leaderless and decentralized, similar to protests that have been taking place in Hong Kong and elsewhere. So like many of these other movements, it seems like women have taken on the starring role. So the article in The Atlantic, written by Yasmin Serhan, says that this moment demonstrates a trend in global mass movements where, and I quote here, protests that feature women are typically larger, less violent, and more versatile than those that do not. So most importantly, they are also more likely to succeed. So that's the quote. And in the past decade, we've seen women becoming symbols of movement in a number of countries. We saw women standing up to police in protests all over police brutality in the US. In Hong Kong, a young pro-democracy activist, Agnes Chow, has been nicknamed the real Mulan. Women took the lead in protesting India's new citizenship laws last year. And over in Brazil, women were a key part of the demonstrations against President Jair Bolsonaro in 2018. And of course, many women also lent their voices to the revolutions that culminated in the Arab Spring.
That's right. And Harvard University professors Erica Chenoweth and Zoe Marks have been conducting research on women in protests, and they found that as many as 70% of nonviolent campaigns from the period of 2010 to 2014 included, and I'm quoting here, moderate or extensive numbers of women at the front lines. And part of the reason why women have been more visible in recent protests is because nonviolent movements tend to be more inclusive and have also proven to be more successful in achieving their goals.
That's right. And women don't just bring numbers to the movement either. So in cases such as in Belarus, Chenoweth says that the women adopted, and I quote, a posture of their maternal roles in society. And so they were seen as shaming the police and security forces, and that in turn makes them more difficult to suppress with force. Now, of course, this isn't to say that women who participate in these protests aren't subjected to the kind of violent crackdowns that have really become quite a familiar response when we see mass demonstrations across the world. You know, women are very often the target of politically motivated persecution, intimidation, and harassment, both online and offline.
Yeah, and here in Malaysia, we've also seen our fair share of women leading or participating participating in protests and wider movements, especially in recent years. So ask anyone to think of the Bersih protests, and among the key people that would come up are people like Maria Chin Abdullah, as well as Dato Ambiga Srinivasan. So we've also had several women's marches that have been getting more prominent and gaining more attention over the years. So even the climate strike, which took place in KL, saw many young people involved, both men and women, and was led by the Klima Action Malaysia, also known as KAMI, which was co-founded by a young woman, Ili Nadia Zulfaka. And it's interesting, it's especially heartening and inspirational to see our peers involved in movements like this and pushing for change wherever possible.
And so to get more insights into how women's involvement have shaped protests and wider movements locally, you know, joining us today is women's rights activist Ivy Josiah. Thanks for joining us, Ivy. So to start, you know, here in Malaysia, in recent years, it seems like we've seen more coverage of women participating and leading movements and protests. But are we seeing a trend of increased women's participation, or is it because of increased media coverage?
I think it's both, right? Because I think definitely with social media, the news is so instant. But also, I think we're living in an era at a time where there's so much more community participation. There has been somehow a failure of the state, of the government. And so communities and people are organizing themselves to get out there and do things for the community, either through a protest or actually, you know, organizing community programs. So I think it's both. The media coverage is for sure. It's a lot more media coverage. And secondly, there's a lot more community participation. And you're right, a lot of these movements are led by women. Why is that? Why is it being led by women? I think before we go into the traits of what women have, I want to also honour the women before us, because it's not as if women leaders suddenly sprung up the last 5 years. We've always had amazing women leaders, right? Mm-hmm. So if we look back at the history of the women's movement, we must remember a woman called Shamsia Fakih, who was the women's leader, or the leader of Angkatan Wanita Seda, or AWAS. It was a women's wing of a political party that eventually got banned by the British. And she retreated into the jungle with her husband, became a guerrilla fighter. She just basically joined the Communist Party. And while we may not agree with her, the communist ideology, we have to say that a woman, you know, this is, we're looking at the 1940s, right? Mm-hmm. Woman at that time doing something like that was quite amazing. And then another thing I dug out when I started looking at women's movements in Malaysia, I was quite surprised, pleasantly surprised, to find out that apparently around the 1970s, the National Council of Women's Organization were very, very upset when the king at that time was taking on a second wife. And apparently, according to, again, a newspaper report in the New York Times, I couldn't find anything in the Malaysian press, the New York Times reports, allegedly 300 women descended upon the Prime Minister's office. At that time, the Prime Minister was Tun Abdul Razak, right, yes. And apparently they descended into his office and demanded that he persuade the king not to take on a second wife, because they were against polygamy and they thought this was very hurtful to the first wife, the queen. So to your question, why is it happening? Why are more women leading these days? So there's already, first of all, a history, or rather her story, H-E-R, right? Mm-hmm. Of women's groups. So in the 80s, it's Women's Aid Organization and JAG leading protests against the ISA, the Internal Security Act. We led a protest to ensure that there was a Domestic Violence Act was implemented. That was 1996. And it was small, small groups, tiny groups, but still they were protests. And even in 1996, when we led the protest to ensure that to demand that the Domestic Violence Act become law, I remember the newspapers describing us as a motley group, you know, of about 30 women. And I remember being very afraid at that time. We were so afraid of being arrested, but we did it anyway, you know, because, so that comes back to why are women, I think, national leaders when it comes to organizing protests.
Mm. And could you elaborate a little bit more on that? What makes women natural leaders?
Women are just very organized. They know how to multitask. So they're very, I mean, I've worked with the best. I've worked with people like Ambiga and Maria and a whole bunch of my peers in the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, JAG, we are incredibly organized. We know how to divide up the work. We know how to cover all bases. And I think women leaders come across as being more authentic. I mean, research has shown that when it comes to women leaders, their personal agenda, it's not a career move. You know what I mean? It's not like I am want to be a woman leader so that I can have position and power. I'm sorry, my male friends, but my male activists, but women tend to do this because of the community. They do this because, you know, they believe that the community will benefit because they were affected themselves. You know, they say the personal is the political. So when we lead a democratic movement, because we believe that this is good for our children, it's good for our community. So there are very specific traits. Research has shown over and over again, they're very organized, they're empathetic, they negotiate. I mean, we look at the example in Belarus, the women teamed up with other women. They know how to come together as a movement. They rely on each other. They build the team. You know, they spend a lot of time empowering others, raising and elevating other people, you know? So I think all these traits, I saw all these traits in Malaysia among Malaysian women leaders.
And what do women bring to the table when they participate in protests or grassroots movements?
You know, I mean, the only, if we use the word movement, right? So when I say protest, the protest could be a tiny protest among 30, 40, 100 people. And that may not necessarily be a movement. But if you look at the Malaysian women's movement being involved in a grassroots movement, that would definitely have to be BERSE, the electoral reform movement. Truly, it was a grassroots movement because the women leaders were able to mobilize not just 30 people, not just 30,000, but you know, over 100,000, 200,000, all over Malaysia, all over the world. Don't forget, there was also global BERSE. For me, that's what's called a movement, a people's movement. So I think leaders like Ambika and Maria, again, I repeat this, the what I said earlier on, I think they came across as being very authentic. They were always so calm, especially Ambika, right? She was always so calm and very articulated. She never showed her anger, although she may have been very upset. And she herself has told me that sometimes she even feels afraid, especially when you go into a crowd, you don't even know whether, you know, that there's going to be a riot or, you know, there's going to be. And there was, in fact, you know, in BERSE 3, there was a lot of violence. Even though you're afraid, even you feel afraid, you know, being brave is overcoming that. I mean, there was some sense of humility that, yes, I feel afraid, but you know what? I'm going to go out there because I know I have support and I'm going to do this. So I think what they bring to the table is authenticity. They bring empathy. People believe in them. Mm. I mean, I may be very prejudiced because I'm a feminist. I'm a women's leader myself. I am very pro-women. But I tend to think that women leaders come across as being genuine. Yeah. So I think that is something that people look for. I mean, people will follow you because they believe you, because they believe that you're doing this not for themselves, but you're doing it for me. You know what I mean? So that kind of authenticity.
So the article in The Atlantic mentioned that, you know, protests that involve women tend to be larger, less violent, more versatile, and also more likely to succeed. And I guess that links back to the traits that you've mentioned and, you know, what women bring with them to these protests.
Right, yeah. You know, I'm thinking of BERSE 4 when Maria had this incredible idea, Maria Chin had this incredible idea of let's do a 36-hour protest, right? I mean, we did an overnight protest and everybody kept saying, oh no, we're going to have trouble. But she was so involved in organizing it. She was on the ground. She was actually sleeping on the road. You know, the way it was organized was that the police were sitting there across a particular barrier in the Padang, in the field, in the Selangor field, Selangor Padang, and they said you cannot cross a particular barrier, right? We promised not to cross a particular barrier. What did she do? She made sure that she slept at that barrier to ensure there aren't going to be anyone foolish enough to break the barrier, and then, of course, that may result in, you know, an agitate into violence, right? Because she didn't want violence. We all didn't want violence. We didn't want anyone to get hurt. And that's the other thing about women, right? I think we do care about not wanting to bring harm to other people. So, yeah, I think they're extra careful. In a way, if we look at women leaders, because we are very careful and cautious, we think through our actions. You know, it's not impulsive. It's thought through.
And Ivy, are you seeing more young people, especially young women, join protests and movements? And, you know, for that matter, does age even matter?
Absolutely. I mean, Digital Parliament came out of that idea, that brilliant idea, was an idea that belonged to Jean Manisha, a young woman. She was the first person who thought of this idea and then started organizing people. So I see a lot of women, young women leaders emerging, right? Mm-hmm. Heidi Kwa, who's doing work among refugees, right? So we've got Undi 18, we've got Kira. And of course, you know, if you look at the JAG right now, the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, look at Women's Aid, even look at AWAM or WCCP, they all are young women leaders now. So I think it's really, really important to get younger women coming in because I think their perspectives are fresh. And again, I think it's genuine, right? And in a way, I'm really glad that the women's movement in this country, certainly the women's groups that I worked for and I'm still working for as a volunteer now, I think we have, if I dare say, not hog the space. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be here forever and ever and ever and ever. No, it's not like I'm a women's leader and I'm going to be president for the rest of my life. Because of feminism, because feminism recognizes that leadership must be handed over. There has to be, a nurturing and mentoring of new leaders. I think those are traits, those are principles and values that feminism brings to the table, right? So I think the women's movement has seen a rise of women leaders, and some of them very organic. I mean, I cannot sit there and claim, oh, I'm the one who mentored that person. No, it's very genuine, and that's got to do with a global movement also, right, of young people realizing that they better take action because guess what? We, the boomers, are not doing a very good job, are we, you know? They're willing to just get out there and do it themselves. We cannot wait for the government to take action. All over the world, communities are taking action. If you just look up, so we do it. We have to do it because not only because it's a trend, it's not a trend. People are getting involved. Young people are getting involved in community projects because there's no choice. We have to do it if we want to save the environment, if we want to save democracy.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ivy. That was women's rights activist Ivy Josiah sharing her insights on the role that various women have played in leading protests and movements across the globe. I don't know about you guys, you know, have you been seeing more young women being involved in grassroots movements? I certainly have.
I think so too, especially when we see a lot of all the recent movements, right? I mean, just globally, I mean, Greta Thunberg is such a huge icon now, especially when you talk about climate change strikes and changing policies when it comes to environment. But here in Malaysia as well, you know, like you mentioned earlier, Dash, the co-founder of Kami, but also just the Women's March. You know, you've seen over the years so many young women and young men joining them, you know, to raise their voices, to talk about issues that matter to them. And especially, it's especially nice when you see a lot of younger people to see people like my peers. You know, I personally haven't joined any of these strikes or protests, but you know, it's inspirational.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very heartening to see, and you know, it makes you feel less afraid. I'm not saying you felt afraid, but it makes more women feel less afraid. You know, they're seeing their peers, you know, fellow women doing these things, and I guess to get them on board with such movements.
Yeah, I agree, and it's great to see a lot more women these days. I think there are a lot more compared to before. Although, you know, throughout the years, I think women have played very strong roles or important roles in movements. You know, a lot, like for example, a lot of people talk about Nelson Mandela, but you know, his daughters were also very involved in, you know, in the fight against apartheid and all that. And I think I agree with Josiah in the sense that, what, you know, guys always not always, okay, there are like great guys and all that as well, but but overall, I think because of, you know, how patriarchy is overall, a lot of times it seems like, you know, it's a battle among, you know, for ego, it's an egoistic battle, like who's better, who's going to be the leader, who's going to rule them all, you know, all these kinds of things. Whereas a lot of times when you see women leaders, it often feels like it comes from a place that is more pure and that is more warmth. Perhaps it's the maternal, you know, instinct about them. I don't know. Sometimes it's difficult to put a finger on it. But there is something very inspiring about the fierceness about women in these movements and all, especially when society keeps telling women that they shouldn't be involved, that, you know, this is such a, you know, it's a guy's thing, you know, it's too aggressive, it could get dangerous. So like women, you know, you should stay at home, you know, stay safe and those kinds of things. So I think it's extra inspiring because of that.
I think along with that, also seeing more younger people, both men, women, girls, boys joining, it helps to break down these stereotypes that people might have against those who join these movements, right? Whether it's against men or women. And you're seeing a lot less of that now. But then also on the other hand, you can't help but think that nowadays, because of social media, people, especially women who join these protests, tend to be subject to so much more harassment, especially online.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like for like Greta Thunberg, if you want to mention her again, you know, everyone just told her go back to school and study. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Stop protesting. But I'm afraid, you know, that's all the time we have for today's show. But if you have any thoughts, you can continue to share that with us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. You can also look us up on Facebook. Just search for BFM The Bigger Picture and you can drop us a message there. If you miss any part of today's shows, you can download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest. You can find us on the BFM app and we're also on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, it's a repeat of Bookmark, where Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan will be dissecting William Tham's novel The Last Days, which is set under the shadow of the Malayan emergency. We leave you now with Where You Lead, I Will Follow by Carol King and Louis Goffin. This has been The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.